Hey, this is Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs here. Coming up today, myself and Jeff Siegel going through the finances of the Exum trade, where the Cavs cap sheet currently stands, what they could do at the trade deadline, and what their cap situation is going to look like going forward, and what kind of stuff they could do with it. This is Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your number one daily local sports podcast network.
You are Locked On Cavaliers. Your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Joining me now on the line is Jeff Siegel. He is the proprietor of Early Bird Rights. Find him on Twitter at JG Siegel. Check out Early Bird Rights. You can find cap sheets there for all NBA teams, prospective cap space for all 30 NBA teams, and a whole bunch of other great analysis that he does over there, including a really good piece on the Dante Exum, Jordan Clarkson trade. That you can find down in the show notes below. Jeff, it's been a while. It's good to have you back on. How are things?
Things are good. Looking forward to the new year and just sort of getting back into the groove after my big European trip.
Yeah, you came back just in time for what is surely the blockbuster trade. No, but it was the first trade in the NBA since the Russell Westbrook James Harden trade, which is just like a very funny thing. The Cavs make a deal with Utah again. Everyone knows this by now, but 2 second round picks come to Cleveland. Dante Exum comes to Cleveland. Jordan Clarkson goes to Utah. Anyone who has listened to Jeff and I talk before sort of knows where we stand on Clarkson. I've probably become a little more bullish on him than I would have been maybe even 6 months ago. I think he can have value for certain teams. But Jeff, I would say my broad take on this before we get into some of the nitty gritty stuff is, like, if you're going to flip Clarkson, two picks, which will come later on, and you could either use them or use to get other stuff. And taking a roll of the dice on Exum, a former top five pick who's had, you know, I think an underwhelming career so far, to say the least. That's kind of, I think, a good return for Clarkson, whose expiring contract doesn't fit into your future plans. When you see this come through and have had time to think about it, just where do you stand on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the moment, I thought, oh, this is a great trade for Cleveland. Clarkson was not a player who helps anybody win. So where were they going to get, you know, significant value for him? Then you sort of start to dive into really try to hone in on what Clarkson has been doing for the Cavs this season. Try to, you know, not just take away what what I had brought into the analysis, but really look at what he's been doing, you know, this year. And he's been a little bit different. He's definitely, you know, you and I have been very negative on him in general in the last, you know, few years as he's made his way with the Cavs, but he's been better this year, more catch and shoot, more modern shot profile, doing a lot of the same stuff he was doing before, but sort of adding this extra efficiency just literally by, like, not taking long twos and taking threes instead and getting to the rim a little bit more and getting fouled more. And, like, all of that modern stuff that we, you know, have been trying to get him to do for years, he did for the first couple months with the Cavaliers. And, you know, so I think that's how he rehabbed his value to the point where he could, you know, generate some sort of positive, you know, a positive return in this sort of trade.
And I think for me, the 2 second round picks are whatever, you know, like, they could be, you could use them again to package them into other stuff, to get another pick, to get another player, trade filler, whatever. I would all, you know, when you look at what's going on with the roster, I also think just if you're swapping out, like, just purely skill sets, I wrote about this. I think we've seen this a little bit as we're recording this on the 30th. You're listening to this in early 2020. So there's been another game since then. But I think what has been really interesting is that Dante Exum is, like, basically providing the opposite skill set of Clarkson in a lot of ways. Like, he's not as good of a shooter. I don't think he's as good of a player. I think Clarkson is just going to be a better player at this point with where he's at. But I would also just say, when you look at what he's going to do, he's going to pass, he's going to defend, he's going to run the floor well. I just like that fit a little bit better. And again, you know, I don't know the Jazz well enough to say, like, you know, maybe he just needs a change of scenery. I know the injury history is real and all that stuff. The shot thing for him is a big concern, but for him making under $10 million, for being 24, for being the athlete that he is, I'm, like, good with just that being, like, if you're going to get that for Clarkson, for a team that is, like, trying to add another piece and kind of rounded a rotation, I'm good with Exum kind of being the main chip in that, with the second round picks being, like, a good kind of other kind of tool that you're going to add to your repertoire.
Yeah, I mean, I think the difference between Clarkson being a useful player on a decent contract that at least is expiring this year, and Exum being a guy who makes $9.6 million both of the next 2 years, that's the difference in value there. That's where those second-round picks came in, and that's why Cleveland was able to negotiate those two second-rounders, because Exum, like you said, is not as good a player as Clarkson is. Even fully healthy, the defensive element that Exum brings to the table just isn't quite as valuable at the guard position as somebody who can play, make, and score in the way that Clarkson can, especially the Clarkson that we've seen this year, which has been, you know, a more modern, more efficient, just a better overall version of Jordan Clarkson, probably the best version of Jordan Clarkson that we've ever seen. And so I think, you know, the Cavs sold on at the height of his value, which makes a lot of sense. That's sort of the way that they should do it. And Exum comes in with a very different skill set, potentially one that fits, you know, significantly better, I think, than Clarkson's, especially when you look at Cleveland's, you know, the two guards that they're building around, not particularly defensively, you know, strong in that sense, but you pair Exum with either one of those guys, and all of a sudden, at least the backcourt has somebody who can defend the point of attack really well, and can, you know, get through screens and can play physically and is just long and athletic when he's healthy. You know, obviously the Exum injury stuff is really important to note as well. But when he's on the floor, he's a nice complement defensively for either one of those guys in terms of just being able to take over at the point of attack. You, even just for this year, they've got Brandon Knight coming off the bench, another sort of offense-first guard. Exum can pair well with him. You know, Matthew Dellavedova as well. A little, you know, he's whatever. I mean, he's fine. Like, none of these guys are long-term pieces. You know, Dellavedova and Knight are not long-term pieces. So, but even just for this year, Exum fits well with the guards that they've got. And then going forward, you know, it's going to be Sexton, Garland, and Exum are going to be sort of their three-man guard rotation going into next year. And that makes a lot of sense. You know, one defensive guy, two offensive guys. You want to have it. You like one of those guys to blossom into somebody who can play on both ends. But, you know, if you're going to just build a three-man guard rotation, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Last thing this for a second here. Do you, we've kind of talked positively about Exum. I think there are clearly some warts on him as a player. Where do you think he is at value-wise in terms of, he's 24, has had the injury history, obviously starting with that ACL tear he had after a pretty promising rookie year. Doesn't really shoot that well. Kind of is more, the read I've gotten on him from people I've talked to is more athlete than basketball player. I mean, what do you think he's like, considering just everything about him? Do you think he is kind of still worth investing in, is like at least seeing what you can get out of him while you still have him around?
I mean, you might as well, frankly. Like, I wouldn't be, you know, he's not somebody that I would like target to try to build into my guard rotation. Like, I definitely, with the injuries and just with his inconsistent play, they're definitely going to need to have another sort of rotation level guard just in case Exum can't go, because there are going to be nights where he just can't play, either matchup wise where he just doesn't belong on the floor, or just literally just can't physically get out there. And so, you know, I think he's definitely a negative value contract. I think at $9.6 million, that's how it's worth the flyer. He's negative value compared to a guy like Clarkson. That's why they got this sort of those extra picks as well. I wouldn't think that his trade value is necessarily, you know, very good throughout the league. It is something where he probably fits a little bit better in Cleveland than he would elsewhere. They're going to be a little bit more patient with him because they've got, you know, this long-term time horizon. They can be more patient. They don't need him to contribute immediately. That was the issue that he had in Utah, is that Utah's trying to win games right now, and he wasn't helping them do that. That's why he was out of the rotation. That's why they were able to make this trade. So I think, you know, for Cleveland, he's somebody that they can take a flyer on, but he's not somebody who has, you know, a tremendous amount of positive value.
Yeah, I think that seems about right to me. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and then they're going to be back with more from myself and Jeff Siegel, getting into some other possible trade options and what could come next for the Cavs. So stay tuned for that. Okay, Jeff, we're back. The Cavs are obviously, I think, going to be an active team. I think that's theoretically just kind of likely. When you look at teams that have kind of the ability to do some stuff, move some expiring contracts around, don't have an incentive to try and move guys that theoretically could help better teams this year, I mean, you know this, Atlanta has a bunch of guys that could do that. Memphis has guys like that. The Cavs have guys like that. They can also take money back and kind of do some stuff with it if they want to eat into a little bit of their 20 cap space. The Cavs did lose a little, obviously lose a little bit of flexibility, but right now they're still projected, according to the Birderettes, to have about $25.4 million in cap space. That's not nothing. I believe it's, what, like fourth in the league or something like that, behind, or fifth in the league behind Atlanta, Charlotte, Memphis, and the Knicks all can have a bunch of cap space. The Cavs will, again, have some stuff to work with there, but they're possibly not done. I think Kevin Love's the big one. John Henson is out there. Tristan Thompson, harder to trade, but I think certainly could help a team. But again, I think a deal's hard to get. If you're prognosticating, we still have like 6 weeks going until the deadline. You and I are likely going to talk about this again, and stuff's going to come up. But we know they're open for business. What to you, now that they've made that first trade, stands out to you as kind of the logical next piece to maybe move around here, if it's Kevin Love or something else?
I mean, I think Thompson is the one that I would target as the next move, just because because his contract is expiring, there's a real deadline on, are they going to get value for him, or is he going to walk away in 2020 free agency? You would think, based on the kind of player he is and the kind of teams that he's been on, that he wants to win. He wants to be in a situation where they have a significant chance to win. So coming back in free agency to a Cleveland team that is still going to be young, that is still going to be building, he's going to be 31 or 32 at that point. You know, it doesn't seem like they're going to get a bunch of value out of him on his next contract, if any. So it's the deadline is now for them to get anything for Thompson. Obviously, you know, whether his contract, you know, overall these last 4 years has been a positive or negative, it was something that they had to do coming off of the championship in 2016. It's hard to look at that contract and be like, oh, they definitely should not have done that. Like, they were bringing, you know, they were getting the band back together for a championship team. It was fine. But now that we're in, you know, 2020 going forward, now that they're, you know, going to build around Garland and Sexton and whoever they draft at the top of this next draft, Thompson doesn't totally fit that. So I think that he's the guy that they should be targeting and the other teams should be targeting to move on from. And so I think, similar to Clarkson, where you find a team that you can trade Thompson to that gives a little bit of value back, but also that team will benefit from having his bird rights. I think that's something that is important to other teams, is to look at Thompson will have some value, even if he's got an outsized cap hold. If the team is already over the cap anyway, then that cap hold really doesn't matter. And, you know, making a deal with him with his bird rights will behoove them. So I think that's the sort of team that they're looking for. That's the team that they found with Clarkson, where they send him to Utah and Utah values his bird rights. And that was part of the trade. And so, you know, where that is a little bit more difficult to find, because, you know, Thompson's a center. He can't really shoot. He's been experimenting with that a little bit this season, taking more sort of long twos, taking a little bit, you know, spacing out to the three-point line a little bit. I mean, there's some of that is good, but, you know, he's still a long way away from being, you know, Brook Lopez. So I think that's where you have some issues, is just, can you find a team that values him enough to make a deal?
So here's where I think this becomes a little trickier for me, and why I don't know how likely. I think there's two kind of thoughts here that I have that make me think he's maybe not as flippable as you might think. Number one, I think his cap, like just his, the amount of money you have to match from this year. You know, Bill Simmons has like podcasts about this and like advocated for like changing like the salary number for trades or whatever, like the percentage you need to match. You know, I don't think Tristan's a buyout candidate. I think that's probably crazy. But 18.5 is like not the easiest thing to match.
You've got to send out 13.5 to match 18.5, unless you're a tax team and that's a little bit more. But like, assuming you're just a regular over the cap team, 13.5, I mean, that's not nothing. Certainly there aren't a ton of teams with just 13.5 million in dead weight sitting around. So, you know, that will be somewhat difficult to find.
Well, and just look at like the teams that are going to need or could use Thompson, or teams that are already in that taxi sort of range. I don't know if there's like a team that like has the right thing to give back to the Cavs and has the need for Thompson that really makes sense in this regard. I don't know if you have one that jumps out to you. Like, I think he would be good with the Clippers. I don't think there's a Clippers trade that makes a lot of sense. You know, I think, again, there are other situations where I think he could be useful. I just don't know how the money with the actual trade for him sort of works. It's why, and also I just think for, in terms of him helping the team this year, he is like the culture setter of the team. And like, I get the sense from that, that they're a little, they'd be hesitant to just remove that structure. Even if he can walk next summer, I wonder if they just would not want to remove him and Delly as kind of the lead guys in that sense. I wonder if they would not, they would be hesitant to remove him in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, the Clippers, that's a good call. I was thinking about something with Minnesota, because that's a team that does have about the same amount of money just sitting around, and they've got some money going into next year in Gorgui Dieng. You know, if Minnesota wants to, you know, try to turn this thing around and compete there, you know, as we sit here, they're 11-20. They're not particularly competitive. We've already got some Karl Anthony Towns' unhappy stuff coming out today and yesterday. So, yep. You know, there's something going on there. If they wanted to make a deal, Thompson for Dieng and you know, something small, you know, some sort of small asset comes to Cleveland to make that work, sort of similar to the Clarkson-Exum trade, where Exum is a negative value salary that goes into next season. So so Utah sort of had to pay up on those 2 second-round picks. Something like that with Dieng and Thompson might make some sense. You know, the Clippers make sense, but again, like, you know, where is that trade, you know, really going to crop up? That's going to be a problem in terms of, you know, how they value him inside the organization. That's something that, you know, as an outsider is sort of more difficult to ascertain. How much he values being valued also matters, because that, you know, is sort of how are they going to, you know, if they're going to re-sign him, if they're going to bring him back next season, and if they feel like they have a good chance to do that, then this whole thing is very different, because then they want him around next year. Then his bird rights actually matter to them. Then having him around means something on top of just being a good player on a decent contract. I think that's where things can go very haywire for a trade candidate in that sense, is that if Cleveland wants him around long-term and he wants to be around long-term, then he's probably not getting moved.
Who of the other expirings to you? I don't know how many teams are going to be wanting to like clear cap for next summer. So again, it's a weird free agency class. Are there teams in your mind when you look out there that you could see as being someone who just wants to get some money off and you could flip Brandon Knight, Delly, John Henson, I think John Henson just at a cheaper number and not as good as Thompson, but probably could help some team with some center depth. He's been pretty solid when he's been healthy this year. Is there a guy in there that you think is just could make sense in terms of just a trade dump, the Cavs eat a little salary, and then give some teams some flat cap flexibility for next summer?
I mean, pretty much not. I mean, that's kind of been the theme of trade season so far. That's been the theme of about the last 6 months of transactions, is that 2020 free agency looks like it's going to be really, really bad. So teams aren't really trying to clear a ton of cap space for next summer. There, a lot of these big 2016 expiring contracts have been flipped for one another over the years, have been flipped for other things over the years. But now that all of them are coming off the books in 6 months, nobody really is bothering too much to try to, you know, find cap space to spend in 2020. The only two guys out there who extend past that are Gorgui Dieng and Nicholas Batum. And, you know, I think the Hornets definitely aren't like trying to create more cap space. They're already going to have like $30 million in cap space, something like that, for this coming summer. And then Minnesota clearing that kind of space really doesn't do a whole lot for them. They're not in a situation where they're trying to clear a bunch of space. Nobody wants to have cap space going into this summer. So it's not trading expirings for future money is possible, certainly, like we just saw with Clarkson and Exum, but it's going to be smaller deals like that. It's not going to be these big swings where, you know, the Cavaliers are going to try to take on $25 million in salary for next season and clear out their cap space so that a team can get to max room. No, there aren't any max free agents on the market anyway. So the you know, other than the restricted guys, you know, Brandon Ingram comes to mind there. But, you know, if there's only one guy and he's restricted, teams aren't going to go out of their way to really clear space to try to do that sort of thing. And they're not going to pay up to do it. So for Cleveland, you know, I think Gorgui Dieng is sort of the one who may get moved. Brandon Knight, Tristan Thompson sort of fit the bill there if Minnesota is trying to clear some financial flexibility going forward. But they don't need to do that, and I don't know that it makes a ton of sense for them to spend assets to do so.
Last thing on this section here. Any non-Portland Kevin Love trade ideas you have?
Yeah, I mean, Phoenix might, you know, decide to try to go in on their current core and try to, you know, spend some of their trade assets to do it. I think he, you know, a guy like Tyler Johnson, you know, attach him with a couple of other small salaries, and you can get to that $23 million number that you need to trade for Kevin Love's $29 million. That's possible. I mean, it's not something that I would advise Phoenix to do, but we know that Phoenix is willing to do some things that will accelerate their timeline, and is they're not necessarily focused on the long term as much as maybe we would like them to be on the outside. So if Sarver says, hey, we got to make the playoffs right now, then maybe Phoenix decides, like, you know, let's go in for Love and try to figure it out with Love and Ayton and Booker as our sort of guys going forward. It's not something that I would particularly love for them, but it's possible. You know, Portland, of course, like you talked about. You know, outside of that, I think it's sort of that market has cooled in the last few weeks. I don't know that it's something that that makes a ton of sense for a lot of teams. He's just got so much money left on his books, so much money left on that contract, you know, still, you know, $90 million after this year, $92 million, something like that after this year. It's just a lot of money to pay an aging Kevin Love. It was why the extension in the first place wasn't a fantastic deal, and why, you know, this is sort of why that they're, when they're running into issues like this, that, you know, maybe it wasn't quite as smart as it seemed perhaps to them at the time to extend him at such a high number.
Yeah, I think that's all right. I'll be very curious to see what the Kevin Love market ends up looking like, because I just don't really.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if he gets moved before this deadline. Like, I think there's not a whole lot of urgency to trade for him or to trade him if you're Cleveland, because, you know, he's on a contract for the next 3 years. Like, they'll find a trade for him eventually, but I don't think that it's something that needs to happen this year. And I don't see a team out there with a Kevin Love sized hole on their roster who really would be willing to eat those last few years of the contract in order to get him this year.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Okay, we're going to take one more break and then come back to just look at what the kind of cap space the Cavs have going forward. And I'm going to pitch Jeff some ideas on what they could do with it and see if he thinks I'm crazy or not. So stay tuned for that on more Locked On Cavs. All right, Jeff, Ken, to set the table here, the Cavs could have right now you project them to have about $25.4 million in cap space next year. Some of the other trades they can make would certainly impact that. If they take a Gorgie Dang thing, would certainly, I think, eat into that cap space in a non-significant way. They're not going to have unlimited money to do anything with. But when you look at them and you look at just this number, considering they probably shouldn't be spending big anyway, they're going to bring in multiple rookies, it seems like, in some way, or, you know, perhaps maybe do some interesting stuff with it, or with, in terms of, you know, giving veterans 1 year kind of mercenary contracts. Is that is that number useful enough, even in a bad class, to do something with? Like, do you think there's a way they can get some value with that amount, at that amount of cap space?
Yes, I think the biggest thing that they can do is try to make life harder on other teams. You know, whether, you know, I think that particularly is with restricted free agents, and that's where a lot of teams this summer are going to look toward the restricted market, because almost all of the teams that have space, really outside of the Knicks, who don't really seem to have any kind of plan, but if they did have a plan, it would be built around RJ Barrett and some of their other young guys. The other teams, Cleveland, Memphis, Charlotte, Atlanta, those are the teams that absolutely will have space this summer and have a lot of it. Those are all young teams building around young guys, building around young guards in particular, for the most part, especially now that Charlotte has gotten so much out of Devontae Graham. They still have Terry Rozier for 2 years after this. Those guys, they've got their guards kind of locked in. Obviously, Cleveland has their two guards locked in. Atlanta has Trae Young. Memphis has Ja Morant. The guards are sort of locked in on these young teams, and then you look at what do you need around those guys? You need wings who can play. You need bigs who can play. Some of those teams have bigs who, you know, are already, you know, on the team and are very good. Jaren Jackson Jr., John Collins in Memphis and Atlanta. Charlotte doesn't totally have their sort of big of the future. You know, PJ Washington is not really a big. He's more of like a sort of a you know, combo forward. I think that's where a lot of teams can find value, is on the restricted market. A lot of these teams will find value on the restricted market, just putting the screws to other teams who wanted to maybe get their restricted guys back a little bit cheaper. You know, a guy like Bogdan Bogdanovic coming out of Sacramento. You know, Brandon Ingram is going to get a max deal from somebody, whether it's New Orleans or on the open market. There's, you know, it kind of dwindles down after that. You know, you have guys like Juancho Hernangómez and Malik Beasley who are kind of interesting. You've got some, you know, some other guys, you know, further down in the second round and undrafted classes over the last few years who are coming up for restricted free agency who might be kind of interesting. But right at the top with a couple of those guys, especially Bogdanovic and Ingram, you're going to see a lot of these teams with cap space sort of jostling for positioning with those two guys in particular, because those two guys, especially Bogdanovic, will fit with their young guards really well and will be able to sort of just slide right into their rotation. And so I think that's what Cleveland could do, is look to spend that $25 million when they know that they can get those mercenary contracts later. They can find a veteran who can play in their rotation on July 15th for no problem. Like, they don't need to go out on day one and do that. Well, on day one, what they need to be doing is getting in the room with Bogdanovic, with, you know, if Brandon Ingram will give them a meeting, that's, you know, that would be good. Even getting into the room with a guy like Chris Dunn, who can be that sort of defensive guard off the bench that Exum might be but might not be, that would be a nice little – that would be a good fit for them next to their offense first guards. There are guys on the restricted market that Cleveland should really focus on trying to give slightly outsized contracts to, so that either they get them on deals that are slightly outsized, but again, for a Cleveland team that's rebuilding, not a problem to overpay for guys, or – their incumbent teams match and you just put an outsized contract on another team's books. And that's always a good thing. We saw how Brooklyn was able to do that multiple times and then, you know, get assets with Allen Crabbe and then, you know, trade him out later when they were more competitive. I think that's a course of action that I think makes a ton of sense for Cleveland and for all of these teams with a ton of cap space this summer.
All right, let's run through some names of guys that theoretically could be worth like a 1 year. I don't think there's anyone in the market. There's one guy that we'll talk about that I would sort of be okay with being a thing where you maybe spend a little more money on, maybe two. But I'm going to start with the big one. And this is just like, because I don't, and you can explain if this is crazy to me or not. But considering the amount of money they've already spent elsewhere, and considering I think he's likely to get paid, he's at the right age to get paid, and the Cavs would, I think, he would fit pretty well as a pick and roll guy. Is like throwing a bunch of money at Montrezl Harrell like the nuttiest thing in the world to try and do next summer?
I mean, if you want to stop anybody, that would probably not be my first choice.
Look, like the Cavs are not we're beyond that, Jeff. I'm just looking for like someone to run a pick and roll.
They're
with
never going to play defense the rest of the Sexton. You know,
I mean,
maybe,
but like
Garland.
that's like, I don't know. I just like, you could do worse.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that would be somebody to throw a bunch of money at. He's a little bit younger. He fits certainly very well in pick and roll with those guys. It might get them to pass every once in a while, which would be nice. You know, I think that would be good, especially for Garland. At some point in his life, he's going to have to pass the ball to
a
teammate.
It's interesting you say Garland, because I think it's more of a Sexton issue.
Okay. I mean, that's not good.
I will say this, anyone listening or like, yeah, it's true. But if you watch a Cavs game, I would just say when Colin Sexton has the ball, watch Kevin Love. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. I mean, just for Love's just happiness, we got to find a way to get him out of there. But, you know, if he was willing to take a $60 million buyout, you know, at that point, maybe the Cavaliers consider that. But for Harrell, I think, I mean, if they're going to just go all in on offense and try to find a pick and roll partner for these young guards who is going to be open and such a good screener and roller that you almost like have to give him the ball, that would probably be good for their development long term. That would be a nice piece to sort of excite the fans in some way. Like, that would be a good free agent get where you could sort of build a these guards are going to play really well with Harrell. You could build sort of a marketing campaign around that. You're not going to stop anybody. You're not going to win a lot of games with that crew. But, you know, if they wanted to significantly overpay for him and try to really put the screws to a Clippers team that, you know, has a bunch of money, but it might not want to spend a whole lot of tax money over these next 2 years, that I think that would make a lot of sense. I wasn't sure where you were going with that, but I thought you might be going into Andre Drummond territory. Which
I want nothing to do with that.
I mean, I don't think anybody should from like a value perspective, but again, like if you were looking for sort of a more well-balanced center who could rebound and defend the rim and do, you know, be a lob threat in pick and roll, but not necessarily be sort of a focal point of the offense, I think that would make some sense. But if they have to overpay him significantly, then I don't think that makes a ton of sense for pretty much anybody.
Yeah, I don't really know what to make of Drummond. I just don't know what to do with a guy like that. I don't think it's like it's like 100% like a bad idea, but like it also doesn't like fill me with like optimism to like think about like paying Andre Drummond a bunch of money.
Yeah, I mean, for the Cavs, now that they've made this trade and are stuck at about $25 million, they can make another trade to sort of get off of Exum's money or whatever. But if they go into the summer with $25 million and they go to Andre Drummond and say, hey, here's our entire 20, you know, here's four for $100 million, $25 million a year, at least that's not a max. I mean, that's good. Like, it's not, you know, it's not getting north of 30. And it's all that they can do. So it's in a way that it's almost better for them that they're not going to have so much money that they can just max him out without having to make another significant trade on the margins in order to clear that extra money. So, you know, if they were to go to him and be like four for 100, pretty much the same contract you were just on, we want you to be a pick and roll partner and a defensive center for our young guys. You're still just 26. He's younger than Anthony Davis. Like, you can sort of, he's still technically young. He's still young enough to be on the guards timeline, on their long-term timeline. I think they could do that, and I wouldn't totally hate it. It wouldn't be fantastic, but I don't know that there's like an absolute home run move for them to make on this in this free agent class anyway.
Yeah, that actually, I think that could be okay. I'm going to regret saying that. Bogdanovich was another one I would throw out there. I'm very intrigued by him.
Yeah.
What about Joe Harris?
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know what his situation, like what Brooklyn's going to look like. I would, you know, he obviously played for the Cavs, didn't work out all that well. But what would you make of a possible like mercenary contract to bring some shooting in?
I think that's something where they could get him. If they wanted to get him, they'd have to really pay for it because he fits so well on a good team that all the good teams are going to want him. And all the good teams are going to try to move whatever they need to move to get him, you know, to get him on a sign and trade, to get him, you know, even if he's willing to take like the non-taxpayer mid-level, that opens up a ton of extra suitors for him. And if he's willing to take that, then what does Cleveland have to pay to get him to come to a rebuilding situation where he's not playing with any sort of pass first point guard and is probably not going to get the ball all that much? Like, I don't, if you're Joe Harris, I don't think you want to come to Cleveland, frankly, because your main skill set as being an off-the-ball shooter is not going to be as useful to a team that's rebuilding and as useful to a team that doesn't necessarily have those sort of pass-first point guards.
I think that's right. Is there anyone else in that free agent class that stands out to you as interesting? Like, I don't know what's going to happen with like Royce O'Neal's like contract, but like I would throw, if he became like on the market, I would be trying to get a meeting with him. Like Ingram is another name, but it's not a great class. There's a lot of just like a lot of meh on that in that free agency class. You know, the Cavs also have incentive not to like sign too many guys and take away minutes for KPJ and Garland and Windler and whatever. They have Jetty obviously under contract on the wing as well. You could add one guy, I think, on the wing if you don't want to hinder the young guys. But is there anyone else to you that would kind of stand out as an option there?
I mean, if they wanted to go full blown, like young guy who might be good eventually but has never been good so far, they could look at Josh Jackson. That would be literally for like maybe the minimum, just north of the minimum. Like, he's not going to get much next summer, but that would be somebody who at least sort of fits with their timeline. Like, maybe they get him on some sort of team friendly deal. you know, Davis Bertans in Washington is similar to Joe Harris, but much better in terms of just being, he's bigger and he can get a shot off against anybody. And he's just, you know, shooting the lights out for Washington right now. That would be another situation where I don't see why Bertans would pick Cleveland over all of the other places that he could pick. But if they could, that would be a good, you know, a good player to try to get a meeting with. I mean, you could look at a guy like Jabari Parker. We mentioned Montrezl Harrell. Some of these younger guys, Trey Lyles has a non-guarantee for next year. We'll see where he lands. Rodney Hood's got a player option. He's injured, but we'll see. Daniel Theis would be a nice option for them, but I don't think he's going to make it to the market. I wouldn't assume with the way he's playing and the fact that his contract is non-guaranteed for next summer. So I don't see him making it to the market, but he is technically on there. It's not, I mean, these are a lot of smaller names that are not, they're not changing the course of your franchise. Like I think that they should, if I were running Cleveland, I would say to really throw a lot of money at the restricted guys first and then come back and circle back on the unrestricted guys later, unless there's one of these big time unrestricted guys who is interested in signing with you. And that's really just like Montrezl Harrell or, Andre Drummond, or, maybe one of the shooters in Harris or Bertans. But other than that, I think spending some of their space on guys, Brandon Ingram, if they can, Bogdan Bogdanovic, if he falls through the cracks a little bit throughout the league, those are the guys that I would focus on.
Last thing, if you had to pick between a Drummond at like 20 something a year, or on a multi-year deal, or like a 1 year bring back Tristan Thompson on a mercenary contract, which would you prefer if you're Kobe Altman?
I think I would prefer Tristan Thompson, because if he is willing to sign that 1 year mercenary deal, that means he's happy in Cleveland and he wants to be there, and he's not just there to take the money. I mean, unless a 1 year deal is like $25 million.
I'm saying it's probably like, he made 18.5 this year. Maybe he goes down to like $15 million on a 1 year when you're not using your caps or anything else.
If he's willing to take that kind of pay cut to stick around, even though that's closer to where his value is, but if he's willing to do that, I'd rather have Thompson on a 1 year deal. I'd rather even have Thompson on like a 2 year deal if he's willing to stick around, because that means he's embracing that leadership role. That means he wants to be there. That means he wants to sort of help them build up the next great Cavs team in a way that if Drummond were to come in on like a 4 year deal for $100 million or $110 million, that might, if it worked out that the market, if the Cavaliers are sort of overpaying the market to get him because he's sort of one of the more coveted unrestricted guys, then it's hard to tell like how well that guy is going to fit in, whether he is going to be a sort of a personality that fits in with the locker room. But if Thompson is willing to come back, I think that would speak volumes to me as Kobe Altman. And I think I would go with a guy like that.
Okay. I think I agree with that. I got to do a deeper drive on a Drummond now that you've got me thinking about this. Him and Trez are going to be the two guys I probably try to watch a bunch more of and look at some of their numbers for the year. But you can find Jeff on Twitter at JG Siegel. Again, go to Early Bird Rights, check out everything he does there. Read the piece about the Clarkson trade in the show notes. And as always, he was very generous with his time. And Jeff, thanks so much for coming on and breaking all this down with me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.